This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 570, brought to you by Harry's. Go to harrys.com right now and enter code iFanboy at checkout to get a post-shave balm, also free. That's harrys.com, code iFanboy, and iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 570. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And we found Josh Flanagan.
Josh came home.
What? It's so cold.
Well, Josh, just because you can't run away every time you don't like what's going on at home.
Wow. I was just like, do we take the edgy comedy route or do we softball that one? Because I could have gone either way. Go on.
We are iFanboy. We read comics. We read our stack of comics. One of us picks our favorite book and call it the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books. Patron pick. Some listener mail if we have time. It'll be a fun time. It'll be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be spoilers. Use your head. Josh had the pick this week.
I did have the pick.
This is a minefield script.
It makes it interesting.
This week's been a lot of fun. So this was one of those weeks where I sort of read everything and I went, oh, I don't know what to do. So I had to like go back and sort of like, what am I going to pick? Because it wasn't.
I had to go back just to where it all began. What am I doing with my life?
No, it's just like I had to look at the list because there wasn't anything that stand out. That's the way it
so
works.
So I went back to Avengers number 18. I mean, that's where I started.
Yeah, I read 700 issues of Avengers between Thursday and now.
And guess what? And this week's Avengers still didn't make any sense.
I didn't read it. But when I was reading, I was trying to think of a standout moment from the week. And I briefly made a joke to you guys that when you put Stony Danza in a comic book, that's good enough to be pick of the week. Turns out it was. So the pick of the week is Flintstones number 8. That's not just it.
It's also you give me a Howard Chaykin variant cover, and I will be on my knees thanking you.
You will note that I put that in the note on the script just so I wouldn't forget. That's a Howard Chaykin cover in a Flintstones book.
How much do you want a Howard Chaykin drawn Flintstones issue now? By the way.
I don't know if I do want that.
I don't either.
I do. Anyway.
A black
kiss. No offense to Steve Pooh. Steve Pooh's awesome. So.
No, I don't think this book is right unless Steve Pooh draws it.
Yeah. I feel we like had calling some him Steve Pooh might be offensive to him, though.
Is it Pug? What is it?
It's Pooh.
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 We had Rick Leonardi filled in, I think.
Yeah, it was Rick Leonardi. Yeah, it was
good, but I think when Pooh draws it, it sort of sings. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's this, again, like, there's actually bits in this issue where, and we're going to, you know what? We're going to keep talking about this because I don't think we're going to have it long. And it really is a special thing to be like, oh, it's a Flintstones week, which, you know, six months ago, that's not.
And 6 months ago, the Hanna-Barbera line of DC was a joke. It was like the bad Mad Max ripoff and all stuff like that. And the Flintstones is the shining gem in the world. And God bless Mark Russell, because I don't know if you guys saw the preview for Snagglepuss, but we might have another hit on our hands.
Are you joking?
No, I'm not. Oh, my God. It's amazing. And it's Mark Russell.
Well, all right. Whatever you can get that guy work to just destroy corporate icons.
He's a Southern playwright.
So
this is according to the AV Club. I'm sorry, this is distracting from the Flintstones, but the AV Club's article: new comic series reimagines Snagglepuss as a gay 1950s playwright. Well, reimagines, it might be. I think he was always a gay Southern playwright, but still, it was. I can't wait. 2 days ago,
even.
I literally cannot wait. Mark Russell says, I envision him like a tragic Tennessee Williams feature. Huckleberry Hound is sort of a William Faulkner guy, and they're in New York in the 50s. Marlon Brando shows up, Dorothy Parker, the socialites from New York of that era that come and go. Like, how amazing is that?
How does that get?
I don't know,
but the editor just not understand? All right, sure.
My point, to your point that the Flintstones might not be around for long, I don't know. I think it's going to be around at least a little bit longer.
Okay. I'm living in it while I can, is my point. Yeah. So there's actually one other moment in this that is not a funny moment, that, you know how, like, the other thing that keeps happening in this book is we keep getting a view into the life of the appliances, the dinosaur?
The sad appliances.
The sad, dark closet of existential ennui. Yep. There's this. So basically, in this one, Wilma goes back to visit where she grew up, where her mother and other women like her had sort of pioneered the idea of what if we farm, which was kind of interesting and sort of the hunter gatherer thing, and saying that men take all the credit and women have done all these great things and don't get any credit for it. Yeah. Blah blah blah. There's one panel where the mother says something along the lines of you know, how it was hard, and sometimes she felt like a domesticated farm animal herself. And she's sitting up in bed crying next to, like, her sleeping husband. And yep. It was dark.
Yes.
And grim.
Well, this issue particularly was interesting because a lot of the issues, they're all one and dones, right? They're all single. We haven't had, like, a real... I mean, admittedly, we're telling the long story arc of the Flintstones, but we haven't had, like, a multi-issue story yet, right? But some issues have been really, like, we're talking about this one topic and nailing it on the head. But this issue not only touched on the hunter-gatherer storyline and the farmers and Wilma's mother, but we also get a B-plot of a political B-plot,
yeah.
And we get the C-plot of the kids learning about economics. So, like, there's a lot packed in here, and it's all dark.
Yeah, it's. I mean, each issue has that theme. This theme is gender, politics, gender inequality, but the B-story is all about a politician who convinces people to give up funding for their kids' school so he can get new armor for the dinosaur army.
The hospital is the hospital.
Children's hospital. And then the C plot, you're right, is about how the economic system is meant to crush the workers. I mean, it's a communist book. It is what it is. I don't have a problem with that. But that's what it is.
He looks like Marx too. I don't think I'd put that together until just now.
Yeah,
like the economic professor literally looks like Marx.
But he does.
Or is it
Lennon? The odd thing is it's that Lennon, a couple weeks ago on the show, we made a couple of dumb Who's the Boss jokes. Just because we're old and we watched Who's the Boss. But now, in this issue, you have an extended Who's the Boss riff, which just was
ongoing.
I thought it was really weird. I'm not saying we did it. We definitely didn't. I just mean something in the universe saying everyone should think about Who's the Boss for a little while, because we had it in our brain, and then so did Mark Russell.
Yeah. So and there's an infinite amount of humor that comes with Tony Danza's just being.
Well, and it makes sense. Who's the Boss was about gender politics.
It's
and the
Stony Danza.
Politics. Yeah.
Stony Danza.
But it should be noted that's Tony Danza.
Yeah.
There's no like hint to that drawing. It's Tony Danza.
There's no if Tony, and or but. It's Tony Danza
brought in to do the commercials.
It's
to
a very good cartoon, Tony Danza. I might add.
Yeah.
Convince people to give up their funding for the schools in order to make the dinosaurs, the army, better.
And I'll give Mark Russell credit that he does tie in the main plot of Wilma's, you know, kind of why she left home and the, you know, the that whole scenario, basically her father had traded her, you know, and so she ran away and
goats are awesome. Right.
And they tied that responsibility to children back into the political plot, you know, when they're having a town hall and confronting the talking about the hospital and confronting the leader. And Fred gives an impassioned speech about being a veteran and what that meant. And really, he was there to protect his children and very nice. And just and it falls on deaf ears. And the dinosaurs get some pretty sweet armor.
Let's go kill some lizard people.
I like the Sonny Danza commercial where he's talking about lizard people. He's like, look at them. I'm not even sure they're people. I'm not even sure they have children. Weird. Like, it's
just you know, it's hard to – it's not really like one thing. It's just that out of everything I read, this was – again, I was like, oh, that's
really good.
It punched me in the beef. It keeps punching me in the beef over and over. Metaphorically.
It hits the nail on the head so much, and like, and we're totally the C plot of the kids learning about economics, where the guy gets kicked out and then keeps on trying to educate the children, right? Like he's come through the window or through the vent, like
he looks more and more like Lennon as you go through it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he turns into Lennon. Okay, I'm getting it now. Don't read comics backwards, kids.
Yeah, the whole package is amazing. This comic continues to be great, and yeah, I mean, I cannot wait for Snagglepuss.
For your 20 pages, we just covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, it's
dense. They're dense pages.
I mean, I really look forward. Like, I want to see this collection come out, and I want to look back in 5 to 10 years, and we're like, you know what was really the defining work in comics in 2017? Yeah. It was the Flintstones.
Well, it's a book of our time. I mean, if you're able to see through the smoke in 5 years, you know, and printing is still a thing, sure. Oh, it's a good chance people have had to burn all the books for fire. Warmth.
I love it. I love that we're I'm seeing all these articles, although I could do without articles, to say that the Flintstones is the most woke comic, but other people are starting to pick up on it, so hopefully we get a lot. Mark Russell, bravo, man.
And Pugh is a perfect, like, he's been perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. Couldn't imagine a better guy. I want to give that. Not only is there a Chaykin cover, it's a really clever one where they're both outside the bathrooms, and one says hunters and one says gatherers, and they're like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. It's like when I go to a Spanish restaurant, and I'm not sure which one's which because I don't speak Spanish. It's like,
I believe you're a caballero.
Look for the one with the hat. I got to say, I mean, we all know I love my Chaykin, and I love my Chaykin women, but Chaykin Betty is where it's at.
Doing it well. It's like, she's like drawn for you.
It's pretty much.
Also, strangely enough, this is the second of two books this week featuring a giant sloth.
Yeah.
Something weird is in the water.
Which is funny because I just bought my niece a sloth plushie for her birthday.
And former iFanboy contributor Ryan Haupt is a sloth expert.
Well, that's the reason I thought of it is because I was at the La Brea Tar Pits and they had a whole thing about the giant sloth that used to roam.
I've seen that exhibit. Yeah, the giant sloth.
And I sent a message to Ryan. And he started talking to me about sloths.
He'll over do that. Text.
And I was like, I gotta go, Ryan.
You poked the sloth on that one, Connor.
Luckily, you have a lot of time to change direction.
Speaking of changing direction, Deadly Class number 26 continues to be one of the best comic books on the stands, as far as I'm concerned, for my dollar.
It's interesting that you say change direction, because the last issue, or at least I don't think I was on, but one of my last pick of the weeks was a couple issues ago of this, and that was because it was very funny.
Yes.
This was a whole opposite thing. Same book, you know?
Yeah. And
it's really impressive.
And pretty big. And this is the prologue, and where we find out that, remember, we were talking about we've been enjoying the new class and all stuff like that because the protagonist, Marcus, was dead. It turns out he's not.
I didn't like this. I liked that he was dead. I liked the audacity to kill the main character and start with a new group of characters. Seeing him back was not. I was like, oh, that's disappointing. I also didn't like him, so I was happy that he was gone and was fun, having fun with the new character. It doesn't have. I mean, it is comic book, but also it can be whatever. And yeah, if
Yeah.
If his story is about a school, following the next class of students makes sense. And then,
well, that's why I'm curious to see what Remender is laying out by bringing back these two characters, by bringing back Marcus and Maya, and how they will now interact with the new class. I find that interesting. But regardless of what this issue does for the longer narrative, as a single comic book issue, this was like straight up pacing. You know, kind of, you know, like, yes, this is a lot of action. Basically, Marcus is Maya has been is being held captive, and Marcus goes kind of under, you know, we don't know it's him until the very end of it. But, you know, somebody breaks into this compound to save her. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of action, but also Wes Craig on art. I mean, just like the fact that she's hooked up to a box spring, and it's kind of the electrocuting, you know, kind of torture thing. But every time the electricity was turned on, Wes Craig and who's on the colors? Jordan Boyd. They pop the colors to go inverse, you know, to show the, and like those little visual cues that show that Wes Craig thinks on a, like, it's on that aha level, you know, like of that level of, okay, how can I play with what the reader is seeing on the page? Just impresses me every time, and I just love it. This is great. So,
yeah, this was probably my runner up. This would have been my other one, and I absolutely understand your point.
Yes, Connor, I did it too. Yeah.
I don't know that I didn't like him. When he showed up, I was like, wait, is that? And then I had to get to the end. I was like, I'm just going to read the letters. Yep, okay, yeah, I was right. That was who that is, but I couldn't remember his name. And he's just a comic book dude. So, you know, I was like, oh, it's just a human. I don't know exactly that it's that guy.
nobody ever stays dead in comics. So, I mean, but yeah. I get it, Connor. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I like that at least how it happened, you know. So.
I was going to say something about a turn in this, but I realized that was the last issue, not this one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Because I read a few at once.
So, The Flintstones was my pick of the week if I'd had the pick of the week. However, it almost could have gone to Batman 16 solely for the scene where Bruce Wayne has to eat at a Bat Burger.
Well, it's funny because I read this issue, and I did think the scene of Bruce having to eat the Bat Burger was very funny. But correct me if I'm wrong, whether you guys disagree, maybe I'm being too critical or not. But I felt like, you know, the first arc with David Finch on art was really good. And then as I'm reading this, I was like, oh, this is the Finch we were worried about from an art standpoint.
It's not that bad.
I thought there were some pages and panels where I was like, ooh, you know.
I don't know that it hasn't taken a different step, but I mean, it's just like anything. Like when you first get in, you're like, I'm going to really kill this. And then once you get into the grind of it again, you know, it becomes what it becomes. But it's not the super pointy David Finch, like over-rendered thing that I worried about. I think Jordi Belair helps a lot. I don't know if Danny Mickey was the inker previously. I don't think I love his inking as a person.
No.
I like him with some people. He did a great job with John Romita for a long time. I really like his work, but I've seen him on other stuff that I don't like it as much, and sometimes it's just not a
match. It's funny because I thought the rooftop scene with Batman and Catwoman I thought looked great. Yeah. I actually thought the burger joint scene was the one that was the weakest, where there's not a lot of action going on, and there's a lot of nuance and like stuff going on in the background between Damian and Jason and stuff like that that it just felt rushed to me.
Character acting isn't David Finch's strong suit. So when you have a scene with a bunch of people sitting around a table talking and they all have the same blank facial expression, it doesn't help.
That's what I'm talking about. Yep.
So that's where you're not going to shine. This is a better arc for the other guy who's drawing the other arc. Who is that?
I will tell you though, like as coming down from, you know, going from Batman and Catwoman from those last couple issues was kind of like
steamy.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I get it, but you know,
shouldn't the woman working at the Bat Burger, which is a Batman themed fast food joint, be dressed as Batgirl or Batwoman and not Wonder Woman?
That's a good point.
The corporate decisions are not always good.
And how is this legal?
Well, who's going to sue?
Yeah.
Batman?
Batman doesn't have a copyright. Although Batman Inc. did.
True. Batman Inc. did was a, you know.
Thing. I just liked I love the splash page of Welcome to Bat Burger.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With the sad sack teenager wearing the Batman outfit. And then cut to Bruce with his arms crossed, glaring at him.
Yeah, that
and
was
then
funny.
It just, he keeps glaring. I thought that was very funny. I laughed.
I also like the on the menu, they have the Ivy salad, and then handwritten over it says not poison.
I think the lettering on that sign could have been better.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I'd also like to point out a couple things. A, I wasn't sure that I was looking at Bruce Wayne when they switched to him because all three of those guys look exactly the same, despite their age. Also,
he's wearing an ill-fitting suit, Josh.
He wouldn't wear an ill-fitting suit. He would wear a perfectly
He'd wear a great suit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
Dick Grayson's not wearing a suit.
The jacket's way too short. And then it's wrong. But anyway, there's a Mr. Zazz window is what I was going to get at.
Oh, there is.
That's
right.
Fucked up.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, my God.
Each of those hash marks is a person.
I feel like that whole conversation like of like Bruce Wayne talking to him is just like old comic fans versus new. Like, but that's not how it's supposed to be. And he's like, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
My two points are I still don't care about Gotham Girl, and she seems to be driving the narrative. And the other thing is I'll say it right now. I will give anyone at DC 100 American dollars to get rid of Damian. I'm putting a bounty on him.
Wow.
In cash. Cash money.
You really hate him.
Well.
Cash on the barrelhead. Just get rid of him.
That last page, you know, you might be owing somebody.
Retcon him. Retcon him. He was never there. It was all a dream.
Re-retcon him.
Have Bruce step out of the shower. And that's...
and Patrick Duffy be there.
Yeah, have Bruce played by Patrick Duffy. God, these jokes are old.
What if he wakes up next to Bob Newhart?
Or that, too. Either way, as long as Damien is out of the picture, I will give whoever's responsible for this decision 100 American dollars.
All right.
Paper Girls.
Sloth appearance number two.
Sloth appearance number... Giant sloth.
I have a challenge for you guys for this.
I know what this is going to be.
It doesn't involve any cash. It's more about pride. I want you guys to tell me what the log line is for Paper Girls if you're pitching this story.
Oh, I don't even know.
That was literally all that I prepared was, I think I like this. I have no fucking clue what's happening.
Yeah, it's
like Saga is a story of a family that was born from two sides of a war as they try to survive, you know, in their war. I would like one or two sentences that describe the story of Paper Girls because I don't know what the fuck is happening in this book.
Is that bringing you down, or are you cool with it? Are you rolling with it, or are you like, fuck this?
I don't know. Well, last week's episode where you were off on Walkabout, Ron and I decided we were both going to go to trades on Saga because we weren't enjoying it in single issues anymore.
Huh.
I think I may be heading that way with Paper Girls simply because I need more story chunks. I finished an issue, and I just don't know the relevance of what I'm reading or why anything's important or who the characters are.
I went off of this for a little while. Like, I just kind of like I dropped a couple of issues. And I didn't know. I was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't like it. And then a couple back, like I kind of enjoyed it. And then here, I'm like, I'm lost again.
Yeah.
They had me for a bit, and then they lost me.
It doesn't. I don't know what's happening. And it's 11 issues in. We're two trades in.
Yeah.
And I love Brian Yvonne. He's a great writer.
I was gonna say in BKV we trust, right? I mean, it's gonna circle around. But yeah, no, I'm I wish I could say, oh, you don't get it or whatever, but I'm right there with you. I'm enjoying the Cliff Chang art.
If I said I was gonna go to trades, I would never look at this again.
Yeah.
Like I have to read the issues or I just won't. I don't mind. It's funny, I don't mind Saga. It doesn't bother me a bit.
Yep.
I like those issues. Anyway, I hear you, and yeah, that was my note. I was like, oh, there is a giant sloth.
So you're both saying neither one of you can meet the logline challenge.
No, I cannot.
Okay. A group of girls from the 80s, a group of newspaper delivery girls from the 80s,
get
are
caught
mixed
up
in a time travel
caper.
Yeah, basically.
That's the vaguest logline ever.
An adventure.
There you go. That neither caper nor adventure clear up anything.
Nothing at all. So, moving on quickly, all new X-Men number 18. I want to give it up to Dennis Hopeless because I feel like he's adequately carrying the torch of Scott Summers with young Cyclops, particularly in this issue.
You're so beaten down that adequately carrying the torch is enough to get you.
Well, no, I mean that to be more of a praising than it sounds, I guess. I mean, like, this is the first issue where young Cyclops has started to look and feel like Cyclops to me.
I would still say that Bagley draws his eyes about 3 inches more higher than they would
well,
be.
Yeah, you're right.
At this
yeah.
point, Bagley's a bit of an albatross.
Yeah. I mean, But this is a chapter in IVX, which is a shit show, and has an awful Deus Ex Machina, whatever. How do I say that?
Deus Ex Machina.
In the dumb inhuman mosaic, that new character, who jumps into Cyclops, and because he had previously jumped into Magneto, Cyclops can see all of Magneto's thoughts, and that's how Cyclops finds out that Emma lied about how Scott died, and. You know that basically this whole IVX thing is a sham, and that's how it ends. That he's going to go make it right, but
it is a sham.
It is a sham, but
wow.
But this was neat because so what happens is that the issue starts where it's post the battle, the dumb IVX battle, and it's all from Cyclops' point of view, and he's kind of brooding because everybody looks at him and treats him like old Cyclops for stuff that he never did, you know. So there's that ennui of that, right? And then dumb Mosaic jumps in. And Mosaic has taken over his body, and he's basically just hanging out in his brain. And he sees a big Magneto helmet, and Mosaic's like, "Oh yeah, I just jumped out of him, and I keep some of his memories." And so Cyclops goes to look, and we get a great page that kind of goes back in the history of Magneto, where we see Nazi scientists experimenting on him, and we see him ripping the adamantium from Wolverine's body. We see the Morrison era Zorn Magneto, and then we see the current one.
I love seeing 90s Magneto.
How great was that?
That
right?
Costume is awesome.
It's great. It's so good.
Which you don't say often about the 90s, but that Magneto, that Jim Lee era Magneto costume was simple.
Perfect.
It was a throwback to the original look a little bit, but it was modern. It was a great costume.
Yep, great, great costume. Unlike the one that we have now. But so then he finds the truth about Emma and how Scott really died and IVX, and then we just like and he's like, "All right, I'm gonna come set you free." So the truth, that is. So good job, Dennis Hopeless, on Cyclops. And All New X-Men continues to be really the only readable one here.
It makes me feel good to hear you say that about an X-Men book. Like, genuinely, oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Yeah. I have hope for the future.
They can't decide whether to make Iceman have the bald head or the hair, frozen hair look, because it changes.
Yeah. The problem is that that's older Iceman. Now they've got the two Iceman, and when they're Iceman, you can't really tell the difference. And so they've got to make him with the dumb boy shorts costume and the hair. And whereas young Iceman is more of a, you know, looks like a smooth, icy head.
Not anymore. In this issue, he has the hair. And last issue was he started with the smooth head, and he ended up with the hair at the end.
There's no consistency.
They really are driving home the point that Iceman's gay, Ron. He's like super.
I know. Don't get me wrong.
He's like Miami Beach gay. So
Miami Beach. Okay. On that note, we are going to thank Harry's for sponsoring this episode of iFanboy. And Harry's is one of those rare occasions where here we've got a sponsor that all three of us were already customers of. Yes. So it's a nice little kismet in the world where Harry's is my razor of choice, and I'm so happy that they're here supporting us. I got completely sick of all the expensive razors at Walgreens and Duane Reade that are locked up, make you feel like a criminal when you're going to get them. It just was not fun. Shaving was not something I look forward to. But now, thanks to Harry's, I look forward to shaving. It's fantastic. And Harry's is so passionate about shaving, they knew the only way to ensure quality was to buy the factory. So they actually bought the factory in Germany, and now they're making and selling us directly over the internet some of the best razors in the world, and they're cheap. That's the greatest thing. So when you go to harrys.com, what can you order? You can order Harry's razors, which include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Their handle is a weighted ergonomic handle with, as Connor has learned, the very very gripping grips that keep it from slipping out of your hand while maybe shaving your head.
It's a nice update.
Right? Yeah. It was a great update.
Smart.
Each blade has got five precision engineered blades in it with a lubricating strip and the trimmer blade, which I am a big fan of, as I can trim my sideburns to be perfectly cut at the lobe where they're supposed to be.
The trimmer blade is the fifth blade. There's four on the other side. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And that trimmer blade is such a great addition. And they've got a great rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover so you don't cut your hand like I actually just did the other day when I stuck my hand in my drawer. I have four little cuts on my knuckles.
All right.
That's not Harry's fault. That's my fault because I didn't use the blade cover. Yeah, exactly. User. But Harry's is so great. I couldn't even get mad at the blade when I'm sitting there bleeding.
I still love you, baby.
Yeah, exactly. I know this is my fault. Harry's is so confident in the quality of these blades. They want you to try the shave set for totally free. You don't have to press pause or rewind. You heard that right. You can try it totally free. Just cover the shipping when you sign up, and you can get on board to the Harry's shave train. And plus, as a special offer for iFanboy listeners, if you go to harrys.com right now and enter code iFanboy at checkout, you'll get the post-shave balm for free as well. All right? So there's a lot of free there. Just pay the shipping, and you can become a happy Harry's customer. Again, that's harrys.com and use code iFanboy to get your free shave bomb and try the great Harry set. Please do check it out. Harry's is great. We thank them for their support.
Right. So after that, I suppose I can talk about Invincible 132.
You could.
I will. Major character got killed.
Who?
Oliver.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, basically, this is the...
How do you feel about that as the son of an Oliver?
Well, I'm his father.
I mean, as the father of an Oliver.
Well, this Oliver was always sort of weird, not a place. And also, he was given the name of the person who ruined a TV show on purpose.
True. Good point.
Yeah. But this is the one where basically, Mark and... what's her name? Why can't I think of her
name?
Eve, there you go. Had sort of decided on, we've got this daughter, we're out. We're not going to get involved. We're gonna go isolationist. We're going to go Woodward Wilson original plan. Woodrow Wilson. But
we're 2 degrees off today. Everyone is just a little off.
I was out last week, so I'm out of practice. But like World War I, you have to get involved because sometimes Thrag is going to find you. So Thrag and a couple of his kids come and they find them, and it's a big fight. And as will happen in the Invincible book, someone gets torn in half. But it's actually pretty grim. They beat the shit out of the little girl, and Mark and Eve were both killed, but then she reconfigured. It was a whole thing. It was pretty oh, is the series over? Okay, well, it's fine.
We're getting close, right? What's the final issue?
I feel like they're going to 150. There was a note in the back that this is 132 and that only 10...
144. 144 is the final issue.
They were the only 10 series have gotten to this point. So... Right. They're in that route, which seems low to me.
Oh, so one,
maybe 32. 10 image series.
Oh, this is part of the final arc.
Yep.
So it's a 12-part story. So this is the first issue of the final arc.
Yeah, and this was Corey Walker's last issue. He's been around for quite a while. So Ryan Ottley is going to come back and have characters torn apart by his pen for a little while, and that'll do.
But it's nothing to be proud. I mean, nothing to be ashamed of. This is a great book.
Yeah,
and 144 issues of it. It's going to be really something to look back on.
I have never once thought, I don't know if I want to keep reading that. Not once. It's just it's a constant in my life for another year.
Right. Another one of those things that's going to fall to the wayside when we're going to keep doing our show.
Yep. We're out living Invincible. Next,
there's no chew. It's all getting harder. Connor. Maybe Ron. This is you tell me.
Ron hates Superman.
Yep, go ahead. I recognize that, but he's reading books right now that I just don't expect, so I try not to judge.
Okay.
Superman 16. I hate this. I was really into Superman for a while, and now I hate this a lot, and I'm just reading it to get through because I want to know who the hell the other Clark Kent is. That's the only reason I'm around, and I know that I'm going to hate, but this other League of Supermans where... generic aliens are capturing them. I hate it. How do you feel?
Well, we discussed previously how much I love this arc. This is classic DC multiverse nonsense.
This
particular issue, I think was might have been the weakest one, which is it's the finale, I think, right? So that's too bad. But I did that Clark got to bond with King Kong. What the hell is that guy's name?
Keenan
Kong. That was nice because they had met before. I thought it was kind of interesting that they met for the first time in the middle of the story. But they got to hang out on the last page, and
I understand why you like that classic DC or whatever. That's never really been my favorite thing, so maybe that's why. But it just it started off one way, and there was a whole thing going on, and I don't know. That is probably very comic book as far as it all goes. But I
think if you're a Flash, and a giant grouping of heroes and there's some big super big threat, you should just leave and go home because you're not going to make it through the whole thing alive. And in this issue, the Flash from whatever world he's from died to help save everybody,
which was weird because everyone was perfectly willing to sacrifice that guy and then they were cool with it afterwards.
I thought this was the weakest issue of this. I was really really enjoying this until this one, and this one felt kind of like a slog to get through.
I want that. I want that Superman magic back. I was having fun with it for a little while, and right now I'm a little lost.
It might be back. Planetoid Praxis.
You may remember long ago that a creator named Ken Garing did a series called Planetoid, through Image, And he was on Graphically, actually, way back when that was a thing. And he came back with a follow-up to him. It took him 6 years.
Yeah.
And this is the first issue, and I did not remember anything about the last one until I got about halfway through. I was like, all right, yeah, there's a planet. And then there was like a revolution or revolt kind of thing. But what we have here, what I thought was a really interesting moral play that had happened. It's hard to explain. Is it hard to explain what's happening on the planet, what the setup for this thing is? I don't know if I really need to.
I don't remember anything about the last series. So
a bunch of colonists sort of were under the yoke of slavery.
I don't know if explaining it is even worth it.
Okay.
You know? No. But I mean, it's science fiction, and it's kind of, you know, like, and yeah, I mean, I think that it's, you know, you'll recap the previous series. Yeah. Yeah,
but basically, a bunch of people who used to be slaves threw off the yoke of their master and were building this world of their own. They felt perfectly safe. A strange visitor comes. They realize that he's the same race as the people who used to enslave them, and they decide, not unlike in The Walking Dead, to kill him. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, they're like, maybe that wasn't a good idea for this reason, and this reason. So, you know, their society got out of hand, basically, and that's what they're going to have to deal with. And it's a hard sci-fi setup. It was pretty interesting. It was pretty good. I was like, all right, this was good. I remember this was good. But there's been so much between now and then that it took me a good bit of thinking. But if you remember that, if that sounds good to you, make sure not to miss this, because it's more of the same.
Yep. Nova number 3, continuing Jeff Loveness and Ramon Perez's jam on Nova. And this is like, you know, issue 1, I didn't love. Issue 2 was great. Issue 3, I could do without Richard Rider being a, some sort of space zombie.
Is that a new thing?
Yes. It's from, I believe we saw a glimpse of it in the first issue.
No, no. What I mean is that new to the character with the series?
Yes.
Like, I don't,
yes.
You know,
we don't know. That's the mystery.
Yeah, no, that's basically him coming out of the cancer.
What I'm saying is he wasn't like that before when he died.
No, he was not. He was not. But he got trapped in the cancerverse. So my assumption is that the only way he got out of the cancerverse is by becoming whatever he's become now. And I get that's an angle, but I love Rich Rider, and so like
I don't like that. I also thought there was a couple of storytelling problems in this issue.
Oh, yeah. This was a rough issue.
I had trouble following the action in a couple of pages, which I thought was unusual for, you know, a guy as good as Ramon Perez. But
yeah, and it's just weird that the jump and the gap between, like, issue 2 was great, and this was more like issue 1, which was not great. But,
I don't know that the monster zombie thing. I was like, well, that's not necessary. It's the, you know, it's the I'm a vampire, but I have to hide it from everybody kind of thing. Whatever, right. You know, that story we've seen. I really like the interaction between Sam and
me too.
Yeah. Like that. That's what the whole book should be about, and you don't need to make Rich or a threat in that way, or a monster. And the dog, keep the dog around, keep Cosmo, you know, all that stuff was great. So when I walk away from the issue, like, you're right about those things, but I liked those things a lot, so I thought about it favorably, I guess.
Yeah,
it's also tough. There seems to be a need to make everything some sort of deep mystery, whereas you can just have a book about two Novas.
Yeah,
young and old, you know, finding common ground, you know, kicking ass together, you know, father figure issues. Go.
Also, I'm really tired of the creepy looking mouth in the palm of a hand trope, which is being used, like, currently Monet and the X-Men has that problem, and like other, and like, yes, it's creepy, I get it, but like, all right, stop.
Besides, no one's ever going to beat the Corinthian from Sandman.
Right, exactly.
Yep. IT. See?
Yeah, you're right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up.
All right. So, jeez. I'm going to shake that off. Okay, so those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. You can go to iFanboy, talk about the books you read, or these books, or other books. And also at iFanboy, you can find iFanboy.com/support. That's where you can find our Amazon link, where you can make all your Amazon purchases. And we get a little piece of the action. Nothing comes out of your pocket, comes out of Amazon's pocket. Helps keeps the show going. Also on that page is a direct donation button for PayPal. If you're an eccentric billionaire and tax season's coming up, you got to unload some cash. You know, feel free to do it through the donation button at PayPal. We accept all.
We are not a 501(c).
No, we can't give you any tax forms.
I don't know what that is.
If you need to move cash around, we're happy to help. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can become a patron of the show. We have so many great patrons. We get a lot of great rewards. They get to vote a book on the show, which we're going to talk about in a second. They get dumb superpowers. They've also unlocked the Talksplodes and the Booksplodes, as well as a monthly hangout we do with them. We just did our monthly hangout earlier in the week. Next up, t-shirts, which we just unlocked. And we just were waiting on a sample, I believe, Ron. Is that where we are?
I'm working on a lot of things. I'm figuring out printing methods and things like that, yeah. But they're coming. Don't worry. We want to make the best T-shirts we can for you. So they're there. And there are a lot of options since we last did this.
So. Yeah. So patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can help us out directly. Thank you very much, everyone who does that.
Yes. So before we move on to the patrons pick, we're going to go into Star Wars Corner. And last week, Josh – well, Josh, you listened to last week's show already, right?
Well, as soon as you, I mean, as soon as you got home, as soon as you got back.
So, yeah, first thing you did. So you recall me talking about Star Wars number 27, which came out last week, and now Star Wars number 28 came out. And as I said on the show, I don't think I like Yoda.
Yeah, he did say that.
Clearly, the Salvador LaRocca program has been optimized. At a high extent. Actually, there was a little bit of the Salvador LaRocca art, because I read all three of these at once, where I was like, oh, he doesn't look like – he looks like he's drawing that. That's not bad.
Yeah, except – yeah.
No, that was Greg Land in the Monsters one. Same thing, though.
Right. But the point I want to make about this is that issue 27 last week ended with Yoda in chains made of the blue force material being forced to climb the mountain.
Yep.
And this issue opens up and there are no chains.
I got to say, that's not the thing that would have bothered me.
I know I'm nitpicking.
You are.
Maybe the chains were never there.
The chains were only in his mind.
Yes.
The chains were only in the reader's mind.
We wrap up this little Yoda story as Luke. I love the image of Luke sitting in the cockpit of his X-wing just reading Obi-Wan's journal.
Seriously, Yoda is one of those things where I'm like, don't ever do Yoda stories.
Yep.
I don't think it helps anybody. It's like it was like Wolverine Origin. Don't do that.
Yep.
It doesn't need to be there. On the other hand, if we get Obi-Wan on Tatooine before episode 4 stories, I'm all about that.
Yeah. Well, what's funny about this, and as I said last week, and as you heard when you listened, is that this is...
Hates Yoda. Hates him.
No, this is the middle of a C-3PO and R2. C-3PO has been captured by stormtroopers. R2's run away to go save him. Luke is going to save both of them. And so until that happens, Luke is going to read Obi-Wan's journal where Obi-Wan tells a story about something that happened to Yoda.
That doesn't bother me.
I know. Just weird.
You know what I've discovered is the linchpin of this whole Star Wars comic book thing?
What?
It's passive-aggressive moments of not passive-aggressive. It's moments when Darth Vader represses his memories.
What do you mean?
When he looks over at the C-3PO and he's like,
"Yes,
no, get rid of him." But I don't want to talk about it. Those things keep happening over and over again because none of the writers can really take it any further. So they put in this beat where, like, does he have a heart? Nope, no, he doesn't have a heart. Over and over again, it keeps happening. That's my drawing. I mean nothing.
Anyway, so Star Wars number 28. Thankfully, Yoda is now over, and Luke is going to go off and save the droids. So,
all right. So, as we mentioned earlier, the patrons vote. All the patrons at every level vote every week to pick a book to put on the show. And this week, it was a neck and neck race until almost the last minute. Paper Girls took an early lead, but it was beaten at the very last second by Star Wars: Darth Maul number 1. Written by Cullen Bunn, art by Luke Ross.
So this is a worlds colliding moment where several things are happening here, folks. So the patron's pick is in Star Wars Corner.
Right.
And because it's the patron's pick, Mr. Kilpatrick has to read it.
I did have to read it.
Because you do not read any Star Wars comics.
You right, just this told is the patron something that they will use against him in the future.
Well, they know I don't read these books. This is like, to me, this felt like reading Justice League and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers from a couple weeks ago.
Really? Yeah.
I liked the Luke Ross art a whole bunch.
Yeah.
I mean,
and listen, I'll give Darth Maul credit that the character design is fantastic.
He didn't design it himself.
No, I know, no, but I haven't voluntarily read a Darth Maul story, but ever. But to see Luke Ross get, and then Luke Ross drew him great, and in the action sequence and all stuff, like that, it's a reminder of what the potential of the character could have been. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean the story was written fine. Yeah, my problem is I don't ever want to return to this time, this world, this era, and so I wasn't enjoying it for that reason. And I also, if you have to remember that era, Darth Maul, kind of like Yoda, the less the better.
Yeah,
like I don't need to know about him being pissed off he can't fight the Jedi yet. And the problem with the prequel book much like a film, is that you know where it's going. So ultimately, he can't...
It doesn't have any weight, yeah.
He can't go fight the Jedi because you know he can't do that until episode one. So you're kind of running in circles. The monster in the beginning was the monster from The Force Awakens, in case everyone can catch
the
that.
The Wrathgars, yeah. which that scene, which I wish wasn't in The Force Awakens. But
Also, God, I don't know. I hate,
that was great. That was the most real review.
That was awesome.
And none of this is to do with Colin Bunn, but this is...
It's fine.
I feel like the Jedi are diminished when they're like checking people's papers on the streets of Coruscant.
Yes.
You know, like they were the guardians of peace and justice throughout the galaxy. But when they're treated like cops who for some reason are wearing robes, it just seems less interesting.
Yep.
And the robes thing went too far. They all, for some reason, they're all dressing like Obi-Wan, even though he was doing it because he's living on a desert. I just feel like don't go down that road. I'm stopping. I'm just saying, there's lots of reasons why I didn't want to read this book. And thank you everyone who voted for it.
I feel like we just stopped there.
Kind of. I mean, my review is sort of like it's a comic book about Darth Maul.
Yep.
It wasn't anything particularly bad about it, but I aggressively don't care about Darth Maul.
It's a Darth Maul story, which, you know, I don't know I would choose to read this because, yeah, I don't really care about Darth Maul. Like Connor says, the story doesn't carry any weight. It's not going to have any big revelation. It's giving us more insight into Darth Maul's character. But again, he never really had any character. So,
well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, he was completely wasted. Like, it was like, look at this cool looking thing. Anyway, he's dead.
Yeah.
Revenge for what? Right. I don't really want to know, though.
But the added value of this book is that it does have a backup by Chris Eliopoulos and Jordy Belair, which, you know, put Chris Eliopoulos on a droid comic book, and I'll read that till the end of days.
You should specify which droid we're talking about.
Well, he's talking about the Darth Maul's probe droids.
The whisper droids.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't even really like that backup. Like, I like Eliopoulos' work a lot. I just didn't. I think that was not one of his better pieces. It was a little confusing. I don't know. I just didn't like this issue.
He really doesn't like the prequels, guys.
Really doesn't. All right.
And I'm not holding that against him.
Ratings.
I give it a one.
Wow. Josh?
2.5.
I'm going to give it a 3, and it's earning it would have been a 2, but it's earning a point for Eliopoulos.
Like, it's what it could have been and needed to be. It's, you know, do a book about Darth Maul. All right.
Yeah, Colin Bunn and Luke Ross did a fine job on it. Like as a structure, as a comic book, it's fine.
Here's what I want to know. Is there anybody out there, because I feel like this has a lot to do with your perspective coming into it. Is there anybody out there like, that was awesome? That's exactly what I wanted. This was awesome.
No. Is there anybody out there that could do a Darth Maul book that would have you say, oh, wow, that was awesome. I can't wait for this.
Warren Ellis.
I was just going to say Warren Ellis and Derek Robertson.
Like, it would have to be something like that, but they would have to break. Mark Russell could do it.
Like, so we need to answer the next question, sticking with it.
Yeah.
And obviously mine is no. You guys have been reading all these Star Wars books.
No, we haven't.
Ron has.
Have you read I stopped at the Obi-Wan Anakin one.
I didn't read that. I did read the Han Solo one, but I don't think I ever.
Yeah, I read the Han Solo one. No, I'm not going to read this. I got better things to do in my life than Darth Maul.
Okay. If you want to vote for a book that'll make us sad, you can become a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy. And in addition to that, in addition to joining and voting on a book, you get a superpower. Sometimes it's dumb, sometimes it's awesome. But we give every patron of a certain level a superpower on the show. First off, Josh is kicking it off.
All right. Alvin Alvarez.
Alan.
Alan. Oh, Alvin would have been better. Sorry, Alan. Alan Alvarez. His, no matter what it is that they're counting, his vote always counts as 3 votes.
What? How is that a power?
It's magical. Like, when it, so if he votes for a thing, all of a sudden it's 3 higher. So there's 4 guys in a room, who's for and against, all of a sudden it's 6-2.
So what happens on a jury?
I'm not saying it makes sense, but it happens that way.
No, but okay, so let's say, so he gets put on jury duty. Mm-hmm. And everyone, they've all got
to
put
unanimous.
In.
Doesn't matter.
But they're like, listen, we have 12 jurors, but we have 15 votes.
I don't know how this has happened.
He gets dismissed a lot. Your Honor, before we get started, there's something I think you need to know.
So wait, so is his power that he can avoid jury duty?
It's a part of it. It's an effect, really. His vote counts as three. I he's a triple voter.
All right.
Okay. David Brown, thank you. His power, unfortunately, it's another sort of cursed power, is that he sweats sand.
I straight up literally almost just did a spit take, by the way. I was just...
I'd like to point out that Connor lives very near a beach.
I do, but he sweats sand. It's tough. You know, he doesn't shoot it out like the Sandman. He can't control it. That's just what happens.
And you know why that's a curse? Because sand just gets everywhere.
Everywhere. And just,
it's just I hate sand.
You know who hates sand?
Exactly.
Anakin Skywalker hates sand.
Thank you, Josh, for picking up on that.
Hates it.
All right. We want to thank Eric for supporting our fanboy. And Eric can bring the volume down to a reasonable level. Anywhere.
With his mind?
Anywhere, yeah. So if there's a truck going by with the loud thing, he can bring the volume down. It's just Eric. Eric can just make it quieter.
You're talking to my soul here. I was like, oh my God. And this is from a man who just moved back to New York City. So it's just like, just everyone just.
It's just loud. Just
will you kids be quiet? Eric, get in here.
I mean, hypothetically, Eric's riding the subway and the mariachi band comes on. He could just turn it down a little. It's all right. Come on. He can't turn the volume up. He can just bring the volume down.
It's fine. No one needs it to go up.
All right.
Tom Beatty can at will at any point look and sound exactly like Mark Wahlberg.
Every word is every sentence is a question.
He sure can. Okay, he can do it. It's gonna be fine.
I'm gonna go over there. Okay.
Like if he for some reason needs to look and sound like Mark Wahlberg, he's got that in his back pocket.
It's a good power.
It's not a bad look
like
power.
He can look like Mark Wahlberg or just sound like him.
No, he looks and sounds.
He looks
like
and
him.
Sounds like.
Okay, looks and sounds like him. Okay.
He can morph into Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, only Mark Wahlberg.
All right.
Is my sandwich ready? Oh, it's gonna be free. Thanks. No, I know. I'm not trying to steal your sandwich. I don't need it. I'm very rich. I have money.
Oh gosh! All right. So if you want
anyone? There's no one who wouldn't be like, you're not Mark Wahlberg. It's dead ringer.
Even his wife?
Mark Wahlberg's wife? It gets creepy, but yeah.
What about Donnie's wife? Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. So
yes, he would fool Jenny McCarthy.
If you want to fool Jenny McCarthy, you can get a superpower. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy. Sign up today, and we love doing this, so please keep it coming. We got like a year's worth of this coming. So it's
let's do some audience questions. Danny writes and says, I have a question for you about switching to digital comics. I recently moved and just realized how many thousands of comics I have from subscribing over the years, and I am running out of space for them. The switch to digital comics seems like a great idea, but I feel like I'm going to miss the collecting aspect, going to the comic shop every couple of weeks and find that they're a little harder to read. I was wondering, what had been your experience switching to digital, and does the convenience of it outweigh the collecting experience? Also, do you still grab any paper copies for your collection for things that you really like or that you think will be valuable?
Oh, I'm so sick of this question. No offense, Danny. I mean, I understand it's all
in a while.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
Because at one point early on, we were all mixed. Now, I mean, are you still buying issues, Ron? That was a question for me. Okay,
no,
so
no,
we're out.
Yeah.
That's significant if you look where we started.
Right. No, yeah. And for me, it's purely a logistics thing. I mean, I have a storage unit full of all my trades and hardcovers and everything, but, you know, but like issues. And part of it is because I moved and I don't have an LCS now. My LCS in New York closed and is angry on the streets of London. So it's just the kind of thing where, you know, but that said, I mean, it's Danny, to your point, it is absolutely different and it is a different experience. And if you think you're going to miss going to the store and having the fit, then don't switch. Like, you don't need to. Like, nothing says you have to, you know.
You can just not keep them.
Right. Just don't keep them. Yeah. There's your solution. There's your answer. There's your show.
I mean, I used
to.
Even at the very end when I was buying them, I was giving them away. After I'd read them and we'd do the show, I'd give them away. I'd give them to school or to a charity. Like, I wasn't keeping them, really. So you can still go to the store and buy them and, you know, have that experience of going and the socializing aspect of it, but just don't have to keep all the issues. You don't have to keep everything you buy.
Yeah, I certainly don't feel the collecting. Like, I don't feel that that collecting itch being scratched. Thankfully, that itch is not as pulsating as it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, they have records.
Right, yeah, or other things. Well, but Josh?
Well, it's like, I can't fully... I used to fully discount the collector thing, but using records as an example, like, when I started buying more of them in the past couple of years, I found it was really satisfying to, like, go and, like, buy a thing and pick them out and
Every time you bought a
that'll
thing.
That'll be $28.40. Hold on. No, but there really was something about, like, having to choose and having to not have everything available to me at all times. And, like, you know, but with comics, it's more like the issues are you, like, buy everything. And it's just endless onslaught.
I'll tell you what I miss about the collecting aspect. I don't miss it with the issues because with the drop to page count and the prices and all stuff like that. But actually doing the book explode on Red Olive to Russian Olive to Red King, that was like the first book I've gotten in a few months, right? Mm-hmm. That wasn't a Rick Eerie book because I'll buy every one of those the day they come out. And I was like, oh, man, I miss the artifact aspect of a book like this. You know, like, and luckily I still have all those books in boxes, but you know, when we were talking about the paper of the cover and the embossing and all this sort of stuff, like the artifact creation, like comics make some great products when you look at it from the collected edition standpoint.
There's, you know,
all the companies have their own take on it and do little things. You know, some better than others or some different than others, but like the artifact aspect of it, that's something that I, you know, like I'll go to a bookstore and I'll just feel books, just, you know, just to feel that tangible.
You find that satisfying?
And I go, and then they ask me to leave and then it's a thing.
So. Ron's pictures up at various bookstores around New York.
So, but I get it, Danny. So don't
somebody make that poster.
Hashtag
satisfied bookstore, Ron.
Are there any books that we
do
still
it.
Collect? I have a couple of series that I want to. We talked about this a year ago when I got rid of my collection, and then Ron did shortly after. There's somebody drilling into the wall next to me.
You're finally breaking free, Connor.
I know.
Please be like a crook in like a domino mask and a stripy shirt.
Yeah.
And a watch cap.
There's a couple of series like Batman and things, Action Comics I want to collect, go back and get back issues of. I just haven't really done it in the last year. I've been so busy.
I have no desire to go back and get anything collected that's recently put out. You know, like if anything, it's
you
like
know what collections I have to buy, actually. This is not single issues, but DC has been putting all those really beautiful omnibus hardcovers out of like the Silver Age books and the Golden Age books, and now they're doing the Bronze. They're doing like everything.
Yeah.
I just got it this week. It was Batman, Brave and the Bold collection from the Bronze Age. And it was, you know, Neil Adams and all this stuff. And Darwin did all the covers for the Silver Age and Golden Age ones. And I've been buying those like crazy. So that might be where I'm moving towards.
I just got the big Darwin Cook art book.
I got that.
Which, like that kind of thing's awesome. But I don't like pull them out and look at them enough, which bothers me. Because now I have a ton of things like that. And they kind of sit there, and every once in a while, I'm like, oh, but like not nearly enough for how good it is. You know what I mean? It's so good. Right. I should be looking at that every day, but I have so many, I couldn't do it.
Right.
I like that. I don't know.
Yep. All right. Do we have time for another one? Or
do a quick one.
Why not? Okay. Greg writes in and says, I know you talked about it briefly on the show, but what are your thoughts on Superman's newest Rebirth costume? On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being Electro and 1 being a glowing spider, I'm at a solid 8. Besides one glaring omission, well, two glaring omissions, Greg. Greg's glaring omission is that it looks like a classic Superman costume to me. His other glaring omission is that Electro is always 1 on the scale of 1 to 10. But anyway.
No, it's not.
Sometimes,
oh, you're right. He is.
On a scale of,
what happened
on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being an Electro and 10 being...
But what about when Electro's good?
10. 1. 9. Anyway, what do you guys think? Ratings, Superman costume ratings.
The one, so he hasn't donned it yet. We've only each iteration of his costume is closer and closer back to the classic one.
Yeah.
All the, at least all the lines are gone. They brought the red boots back. I don't think the trunks are coming back, and I'm fine with that. The way I'm fine if this is where it stays, I'm fine with it.
Josh.
I don't know. Like if the original is the best, and this keeps getting closer to it, it just shows why can't we just have that? So it makes me want to knock it down, even though it's much better than it had been.
Right.
So no,
that's fine.
Six.
All right. I'm going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being Electro and 10 being I don't give a shit, it's a 10.
I love how much you love Superman in other media. Hate him in the comics. Ron will rhapsodize all day long about Smallville, about how much he loved that show. But he Smallville. He will hate Superman with a passion. Connor, you can email us at contact@fanboy.com.
Connor, when was the last time you thought in your head, Remy Zero, and laughed?
Actually, I'm embarrassed to say not that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. So.
Contact@fanboy.com is the email to use to get onto the show, get to the discussion.
We plug things here, and I realize I needed to plug a thing.
So you got a thing to plug, and you completely didn't plug it.
Well, a lot of stuff was going on when it came out. They thought we'll release it on the day of the election, and then everything will be fine.
Happy days.
Yeah. So there is a book compiled by my friend, our fan, writer Jay Stringer. Called Waiting to Be Forgotten, Stories of Crime and Heartbreak Inspired by The Replacements. This is a an anthology of short prose stories about inspired by songs of The Replacements. And I have a story in there based on the song Bastards of Young. And since I wrote that, I've become a much bigger Replacements fan, so I probably should have written that ahead of time. But as I went back and looked at it, I was like, no, this all still checks out. So actually doing that really helped me do that. Jay's got a story in there. A lot of crime writers who, if you're a crime writer person, you would probably know. Friends Nicolay from, the band, I just forgot. Greg, they're Brooklyn.
Are you just saying random words?
No, there's a band out of, he's old.
The Holsteady guy?
Yeah. Friend from DC Comics, formerly DC Comics, Archie Comics, and noted crime writer Alex Segura has a story in there. Dave Acampo, who was selected for the DC Talent Workshop, has a story in there, and lots of others. Really proud of it. I like my story in there, but the other ones are much better. You can buy that at Amazon or I assume other places, but I know for sure you can get it at Amazon. Waiting to Be Forgotten, and you should check it out. I'm really proud of it.
Excellent. Also, we previously mentioned, and my little plug, I do doing another podcast about Twin Peaks called Damn Fine Podcast. You can go to damnfinepodcast.com where you can subscribe. And on a future episode, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick will be joining us again.
I just recorded my second appearance. They can't get rid of me.
Exactly. Although that's not coming out till later this month. But but stay tuned. We've got some great. We've had Gabe Hardman on. We had Connor on. We've got some great guests coming up. So if you like Twin Peaks, we're getting that much closer to May. So get on board while you can.
That Gabe Hardman episode was really great.
It was good, right? It's all Gabe. He's amazing. Like, seriously, if you're a Gabe Hardman fan, go back and go listen to Damn Fine Podcast episode number 10 when Gabe was on it. And just listen to some great Gabe stories. They're great. So.
I'm just to sidetrack here. His revelation that his whole personality is based on Albert Rosenfeld was like a bomb went off in my brain.
Everything makes sense now, right? Yeah.
This month we have so many podcasts. So we did a Booksplode podcast on Russian Olive the Red King. That's out. You can find that on the feed. Ron and I did a podcast last week about the Riverdale pilot. That's out in the feed. You can listen to that right now. Ron and I did a podcast about the Powerless pilot. That's out in the feed right behind this show. You can listen to that right now. We have this regular show coming up in the next few weeks. We have a Justice League Dark show with the Animation Brain Trust. Ron and I are going to talk about the Legion pilot. We're going to do a Lego Batman movie show. And then finally, in February, you'll have a Talksplode. So you have a lot of extra shows.
I spoke with the subject of that Talksplode, and I believe it's on.
Awesome. I can't wait. Is it that one that we were talking about? Awesome. Cool.
Is it Gabe Hardman?
And then also, that's just in February. And then in March, we'll have Iron Fist, right?
Yes. So lots of extra podcasts beyond the regular, very special podcast coming out in the next 6 weeks or so.
Lots of work. I'm literally editing while we're recording the show. All right, so head over to ifanboy.com where you can find all the links to this, to the show notes for all those podcasts as well as all of our previous podcasts. And if you want to follow us on social media, go to facebook.com/ifanboy or follow us on Twitter at ifanboy. And that's where you can go to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, so you can be on board with that. And, of course, if you're on Twitter and you want to follow us individually, Twitter or Instagram, you can follow us on Josh is at J.A. Flanagan. I am Ron XO, and Connor is at C.S. Kilpatrick.
Ron, should we do a weekly Riverdale podcast?
Oh, Jesus Christ, you're killing me.
If you like the show, write a review on iTunes. Or better yet, just leave a star rating. It's quick. Just boom, one quick star rating and you're done. It helps people find podcasts. And you can also tell your friends, tell your comic store owner, tell the guy you're selling your comics to if you decide to get rid of him and go digital. Anyone you're introduced to, tell them about the podcast. Help spread the fanboy love.
Why are you doing this to me?
We can't do Riverdale. I don't have time.
I know.
But I really want to.
Really? You really want to?
Kind of, but not really.
Anyway.
But kind of. So that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.